Shabaka carves a stone, a stela, again, this round-top stone, that is absolutely unique. It's in the British Museum today. It looks strange, and I'll tell you something, every single visitor to the British Museum walks by it, doesn't look at it. It looks like nothing. Now it's a square stone. And it has a square hole in the middle of it. Right? Square hole in the middle of it. The reason it's lost its shape of that nice tombstone stela shape is that in the 19th century, some farmers found it. And they cut it down to make a grindstone. So it was used as a grindstone for years. And it's terribly worn. But what's important about this stone is that it's the only document we have from Egypt that can be called philosophical. The Egyptians didn't write down philosophy. We're not even sure if they did philosophy. Some people think, no, no, the Egyptians never were philosophical, just religious. I doubt that. But Shabaka, a Nubian, carves a document that I think is pretty close to philosophy. And it's interesting. It is sometimes called the philosophy of a Memphite priest. It's partly theological. And what Shabaka says is, I found a document and I made it anew, meaning he copied it. It was damaged. And he is restoring Egypt's heritage. And this document tells about the creation of the world. And what's remarkable about it is very, very close to the Bible. It's way before the Bible, but it's a creation version that is very close to the Bible. What it says is that the god Ptah, who is the god of Memphis, the northern capital of Egypt, right? Ptah is a creator god. And the document says that Ptah creates the world. And how does he do it? He thinks it, he says it on his tongue, and it becomes real. It's almost, in the beginning was the word. He says it on his tongue, and it becomes real. It's a fabulous document, and everybody walks by it because they just don't know what it is, but I think it's important. Now, Shabaka, when he dies, is also buried near Pai, next to a pyramid, in a pyramid field. Also different. The Nubians do things really differently. They put their pyramids right next to each other. You can actually touch two Nubian pyramids at the same time. You can stand between them, stretch your arms out, and you can touch two pyramids. They like to be, it was like a family. They wanted to be together. They're all together. And the women had pyramids just about the same size as the men, right? Also a difference, right? He's buried the same place as Pai. It's a place called Kuru, which is right next to Gebel Barkal. Gebel Barkal. Now, the name Gebel Barkal is important. Gebel means mountain. Barkal in Arabic means pure. It's the pure mountain. This was a sacred place. And I think it was sacred partly because of the topography, the way the mountain looked. If you look at Gebel Barkal, the pure mountain, now that's Arabic. In ancient Egyptian, it was called Juwab, the pure mountain. Same thing. Same thing. The mountain is kind of like a high plateau. Don't think of it as a pointy thing, you know, like mountain climbers are always climbing. It's more like a devil's tower type thing. But on one side of it is an outcropping of rock that looks very much like a cobra rearing up, and it has the white crown on its head. And I think that may be the reason they selected this as the holy mountain, the pure mountain. And a couple of years ago, a friend of mine, Tim Kendall, who excavates at Gebel Barkal, decided to get a close look at this cobra. Nobody had looked at it closely in 2,000 years. And he learned mountain climbing skills just to do this. And he climbs up to the back of this cobra thing, hanging down on ropes, and he could see there had been a plaque there, a metal plaque. He could still see the metal nails. And it was an inscription by the Nubian kings. They had taken this and maybe even sculpted the cobra a little more to make it look more like a cobra. But Gebel Barkal is a very, very special place. And that's where a lot of the Nubian kings chose to be buried. Now, the Nubians are only going to last for five pharaohs, right? I call them the Fabulous Five. They are great, and they do great things. But the one who starts to have a little trouble is the next one, a nephew of Shabaka, Shabitku. Now, he does the same thing. He sends a daughter. She has a wonderful name, Shepenwepet. Shepenwepet sends her to become the divine adoratrice of Amun. Same idea. He's trying to control Egypt from the south, but he's got a problem. A new player on the field. The Assyrians are becoming powerful, and they are about to invade Egypt, right? He's got a problem. But he doesn't deal with it. He doesn't have to. His successor has to deal with it, and this is his brother, Taharqa, one of the greatest of the Nubians.